Okay, it's 8:46, so I think we'll get started. I think hopefully a few more people will trickle in as we get going. Nicole, are you ready with the roll?
Kip Beasy?
Yes.
Joella Spork? Maria Russell? Robert Mackey? Evelyn Tinsgord?
Here.
Michelle Maisley. Sarah Batiste. Deb Jepson. Mary Alice Short. Kevin Lawson. Debbie Gonzalez. Kayla Hansen. Nicole Klopfer.
Present.
Carolyn Simmons. Debbie Coxon.
Present.
Gary Newman.
Here.
Jennifer Elhard. Louisa Hayes. Mary Sue Date.
Present.
Claudia Coach. Jennifer Ward. Mayanna Bean. Ryan Keel, Kim Eames. Heather Lavengood. Robin Winant.
Here.
Jed Lowell.
Here.
John Clendenin.
Present.
Jennifer Youngberg.
Here.
Walker Wheeler. Brad Crick.
Here.
Kat Williams.
Here.
Jeanette Altman.
Here.
Travis Brinzow. Richard Machida.
Here.
Gary Bender.
Here.
Britton Anderson. Anybody's name who I didn't call or who came called in late or came in late?
Okay, thanks, Nicole. We'll move on to the approval of the agenda, if everybody could take a look at the agenda.
Move to approve.
Second. I'd like to ask your permission to be able to move the our guest speakers if needed. We have a lot of unfinished and new business on the agenda before them, and I'd like to be able to insert them into the middle of that if it looks like we need to, so they don't have to stay longer. So with your approval, I'd like to make that one amendment.
I'll make that amendment.
Thank you. Any opposition to accepting the agenda? Okay, thank you. Okay, has anybody joined since we've done the roll call?
This is Jennifer Elhard and Seward. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, and we now have quorum. We have no pending actions in section number 2, so we'll move on to public comment. Is there anybody from the public who would like to make comment at this time? I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce the director of EHSRM, and I've kind of finally got that right, Environmental Health, Safety, and Risk Management. Our new director, Frances Isgrig, who I've actually had the opportunity to work with a little bit, and I'm very appreciative that she's here today, and just wanted to introduce Frances and let her say a few words if she'd like to, and just thank her for being at our meeting.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you for having me. I'm real interested in finding out what goes on at a staff meeting. I haven't been to before, so this will be a good opportunity for me to learn about all of you. I believe John has told me that the Chancellor's been here talking about safety, and it's high on his agenda. He has put together an ad hoc committee who has now given him suggestions. They've gone up to him how to improve safety on campus and develop a culture here on campus of safety. One of those items is training, which I'm sure John has talked to you about on several occasions. You need to get your training done. the stats that we've looked at campus-wide at UAF, we are about 46% complete for our training that's required by OSHA. So there's some room for improvement. Some departments are at 100%, and there are several departments that are above 90%, and thank you very much for all those folks that have gotten those done. We are working towards making training a little bit more accessible for everyone with a program where you can go and get your Aid is Great all in one place. At this point, anyone is invited that has not done their training to come to orientation, to employee orientation. I would suggest contacting John to make sure there's enough room, but that is available. We're also teaching at CTC in person, and we'll come on site, folks on site as well. So please, if you can, take that opportunity, get your training done. We will help you out as much as we possibly can. Right now is our biggest stormwater time frame with the runoff from the snow melt. So you might see us out and about looking at how drainage is going, taking samples. And we're going to be starting to poke our heads in your areas a little bit more with audits, safety audits. Okay. So you'll get to meet some of us if you haven't met us before. A lot of people have been here for quite a while, and you might know them. But we're going to be around a little bit more visible. And if you don't know what we're doing, just ask. We're happy to pass on information. We'd love to educate. Our website is out there. Give us a call. We can help you if you've got questions on environmental health or safety. Stinky smells, boy, one of our favorites. So just let us know. Thanks, Pip. I appreciate the time.
Are there any questions for Frances, since we're running a couple minutes fast already? Well, thank you for being here. Okay, so with that, is there any other public comment online?
Pips, this is Gary Bender. Would it be possible to up the mic volume a little bit? It's really hard to hear online.
You bet. We can do that. And we can also request that people hold the microphone close, too. So we'll try both of those. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'll move on to officer reports. We seemingly are not lacking in topics that we can talk about these days. There have been lots of topics that are important to staff members, and lots of energy from staff, which is really exciting. I think one of the most exciting things for me in the last 2 months has been the use of the Google Forms that various groups, including Mary Sue's and John's, have put together to get feedback from people. And I think that's been slightly transformative for our group, because we can get information out quickly, we can capture the thoughts of people really quickly, and it gets compiled in this nice form with a pie chart and areas for comments. And I just really think that that's going to be a really nice tool for the future, especially when the president wants, or whoever, in this case the president wanted feedback on the code of conduct, you know, in a relatively quick turnaround time. And in the past that seemed kind of like a daunting prospect, but in 2 weeks we've, you know, had over 600 responses, and it's easy to send him a compiled list of these are the responses from staff. I think that's been a really, really nice tool, and I would encourage us to use it in the future for the issues that it makes sense to. Other issues it may not, but certainly for tobacco and code of conduct, where we were asked to provide information to the administration, this seems to be a really nice way of doing it. So I'm really thankful that that people have taken the initiative to try that, and I'd like to keep that going in the future when we when it makes sense. Paired with our going out, and we've been challenged both by the chancellor and by the president to connect with our constituents, and they want to know how we do it. And so I think this is something really concrete that we can say, hey, we took this step this time, and this is a new addition to things that we've done in the past, and it's worked really well. So I feel good about being able to report back to both of them to say this is how we do it. This is a new thing that a new tool that we're using, and it's working well. I think paired with that communication of going out to constituents and getting information back is also the good connection that we have between staff council and staff alliance. I think the lines of communication there are working really well, and that the president has an open ear to staff alliance, because of the work that we're doing, and also because of the relationship that Juella has established with the administration at statewide, and being able to communicate our ideas. I think UAF staff council does a phenomenal job at leading the pack when it comes to staff alliance, and your voices are heard. We really are making a difference right now. Not to say that there's not more work to be done, but this is just the positive note right here. Healthcare continues to be a major issue, and there are seemingly no great solutions in sight. Juelle is going to talk a little bit more about that today, but that's an issue that we really need to keep on top of. The tuition waiver, it seems there hasn't been, as far as I know, a resolution to that. I think that the standard academic progress, or the satisfactory academic progress standard, is the big the biggest hiccup on that right now. So we need to stay on top of that and make our voices heard. The tobacco issues are still up in the air. There is not an active role that HR is playing in the hiring process right now, but we do want to stay on top of that issue as well. System governance met this week, and one of the outcomes of that meeting was to have a retreat in June to talk about communication, and we've invited the administration to be there to participate with us, partly as an exercise for us to be able to educate the administration why the communication between system governance and the administration is so important. And I think I hope that some of the events of recent have maybe illustrated why this is really important and could really save the university lots of time and energy into thinking about issues if we do it at the forefront as a community. Any questions? Okay, Juella.
This is on. Yes. Okay. So, there's been a lot of activity in governance since we last met. The first week of April, I wrote President Gamble a letter and received an immediate invitation to meet with him. We met face-to-face for 2 hours. It was a very, I didn't walk out with a full basket of goodies, we'll put it that way, but what I did receive was I proposed the System Governance Summit, and that's the eight officers of the four bodies, statewide groups, and we'll hopefully sit down for 2 days in June with President Gamble and Donald Smith and Dan Julius and work on that relationship some. The other big thing that came out of it was I proposed a healthcare task force again, and chewed on it for another day or two and then called and said, yes, I think this is a great idea. Let's get moving on it. So this afternoon I meet with Donald Smith, and we'll hopefully iron out the details of the healthcare task force. I think I've shared my vision with this group before on this task force. I stressed in my sales pitch to President Gamble that it's a group that is separate from JHCC. There might be some minor overlap, but that its primary role is to think outside of the box. It's not to evaluate our existing plan, but to look at other options. And so I have a pretty good plan in my head of how I think it should go. Of course, once the representatives from faculty and the administration sit down, it might change a little bit. But my intent with this group, and this is a thing I want you to keep your eye on and to challenge and ask questions constantly, is my role or my intent with this is to have a proposal done by the end of August. One or two proposals for alternatives or significant changes to the plan by the end of August, because the RFPs for the new vendors are going out in the near future. For the coming year, those contracts will be decided on by December 1, I believe, for the new vendors. And any changes to the health care plan have to be proposed and in place or decided on by December as well, so that the changes can be worked out in the system and so on. So this is it's going to be, I think, a very intensive 2 or 3 months of collecting information and reviewing what's out there. I've proposed, of course, an equal grouping of faculty, staff, and administration. I have an outline, I guess, but I'll give you more information as soon as we sit down with the administration and get some of their feedback on it. Any questions on that healthcare task force? It is a one-time task force. It's not intended to replace staff healthcare committee or the joint healthcare committee. It's a one-time meet very, you know, quickly, intensely, and pass on our proposals and dissolve. So if anybody asks you why do we need another one, say this has one goal and one goal only, is to think outside the box and bring at least one, if not more, proposals as new healthcare plans, essentially. Any questions on the task force? Okay, the rest of the details, there's other details in here that we'll get to later on in the agenda, but I'll leave you with that.
Thanks, Joella. We're running a little bit ahead of schedule, so I think we'll skip over the chancellor since he's not here, and he is expected to be here, so we'll come back to him. I think that for governance reports, I think Kathy is not on the line, but I will ask if Kathy is there. And Mary, are you there? I don't hear from either one of them. So let's move on to unfinished business, the Staff Council Strategic Direction Proposal Update from EMR. And I saw Walker. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning, everyone. So the strategic direction that you're speaking about is the recommendations after discussion with the Chancellor and the discussion this past year, correct, Pips?
Yes.
Okay. EMR has only been able to actually meet once since the last meeting when it was handed to us. We tried to get together again, but we couldn't find an appropriate meeting time to discuss it further. Initial discussions started I think in EMR 2 weeks ago here when you and Joella were able to join us, and the only representatives we had at that time were Gary and myself. Didn't really make any sufficient or significant progress on looking at that, although we did take one of the other motions at the time and were able to discuss that a little further, and I don't know if we want to talk about that now or if we want to wait until the EMR report portion. I would recommend we postpone until then.
That sounds fine.
All right.
Thank you for your work on that. And I know that's going to be an ongoing project. That's not a 1 month project where we're going to turn everything around. So thank you for your continued work on that. And now we'll move on to Staff Council Representation on Staff Alliance update from Walker.
Oh, it's that one. All right. So I've actually taken a little time to put together a draft proposal of a motion based on the discussion that we had had. I'm sorry I don't have an electronic copy out there. Nicole, I think you had gotten an earlier draft of this yesterday. Could you send that out and make sure everyone online has a copy of it, or that everybody gets an electronic copy of it so they can look at this as well? So one of the things that got farmed out to us in our last staff council meeting was trying to modify the constitution and bylaws to help in our representation on Staff Alliance. And part of that also was going to result in a reduced workload for the president and vice president, especially when appropriate. When we have a bunch of hot topic items, that's where it really comes down to. So let me just go ahead and read what I'm proposing as a motion that came out of discussion with the president, vice president, and Gary and myself, since we're the ones who were at the meeting. I'm sorry.
Can we, for those, you said that an electronic copy is not available to those online, correct?
I think Nicole's sending that out right now.
Okay, I was going to suggest if that wasn't available, that everyone can access our current constitution and bylaws and should have a copy of those as well.
Absolutely. So I'll go ahead and read the motion. The UAF Staff Council moves to amend its constitution and bylaws to facilitate continuity of representation on UA Staff Alliance and reduce workload on the Staff Council President, the Staff Council Vice President, or both. The changes to the Constitution and bylaws are described herein. From the Constitution, Article 3, Section E, the President and Vice President shall ensure representation of UAF Staff Council on the Staff Alliance. It's a slight modification there. In the bylaws, we had four areas that actually were modified. The first one related to representation. It's Section 3A, Roman numeral 4. In order to remain a member of Staff Council, each voting representative must serve on at least one permanent committee or serve a special appointment. From Section 4AI, this is President duties. Serve as representative on Staff Alliance or make a special appointment to serve on Staff Alliance in their place. Section 4BI, subletter C, this is from the Vice President's duties. Serve as representative on Staff Alliance or make special appointment to serve on Staff Alliance in their place. And then the last one comes from the committee section and the definition for the administrative committee. Section, and I've mistyped this here, and on the earlier draft it was messed up too. It should be Section 5A, Roman numeral 2B, and adding a second point that says special appointments of the president or vice president. And again, that's to serve on the administrative committee that's run by the vice president. Does anyone have any questions on the motion?
Walker, I would clarify. You indicated with Section 3A, Roman numeral 4. Here it's Roman numeral 6.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is Roman numeral 6. I've misread it. I believe I got that one right.
So just as a reminder, this is the first of two readings if the motion moves forward. So now we have a motion on the floor.
Not yet.
Gary, do we need to make a motion that this is the first reading, or do we just make a motion and it is the first reading?
I would say you would need to have a motion and a second for it to move forward.
Okay, but do we need to refine the motion to include this is the first reading, or just leave the motion as it is?
No,
you don't
need to refine.
Okay. So Walker has proposed what they've been working on right now. So if there are questions or if somebody wants to make a motion.
I move that we accept this motion with the correct language.
Sure.
Okay, is there any discussion?
Gary?
Thank you. There's a couple of things. This is kind of a refinement of what we started to talk about at EMR. This is the first time I've actually seen this proposal. There's a couple of areas in here that I don't know. I'd like to spend a little more time in EMR trying to look at, and I'd also like to have some comments from others. When, for example, if you make a special appointment to Staff Alliance, you as president say, okay, fine, I'm going to appoint Walker, for example, to serve as my representative of Staff Alliance. What accountability? There's nothing in here about accountability that it's serving at the pleasure of, or how quite one deals with that. So there's some issues. That's just one issue that just strikes me right off, and so I'd really like to have people think about it, and if we come back at second reading and approve it, to just like make sure that we've had a full discussion of this, because I think there is a substantive change as to how we as a group are representing ourselves to the higher administration.
I would certainly agree with that, Gary. I think when you make a special appointment, there should be a mechanism for withdrawing that, and you should also outline the expectations of that appointment.
So if we make any changes between now and next meeting, then it would have to have a new first reading. Is that right?
Yes, as I understand it, yes.
Or if I'm under the impression, so we've moved to go forward, we haven't voted, amendments to the motion could be made right now.
Yeah, I certainly agree with Gary's comment, and I know that there was a little bit of discussion about making sure that whoever was serving was being held accountable, and there was a good connection between that person and staff council, as well as Staff Alliance. So I agree with Gary that probably needs to be refined a little bit. Any other comments?
This is Robert Mackey. I came late, but I am attending. I like it. I agree that we need to have a clause in there about serving at the pleasure of the president. But otherwise, I like it.
Thanks, Robert. Anybody else online wanted to comment?
This is Jennifer, and I just have a question for myself. Would this have any effect in the future on the proposed staff council reorganization?
I think it would be. It was my understanding that it would be treated the same way. This is a somewhat independent issue of a potential reorganization.
But would it have to be reworded later on if we reorganize?
No, as long as those sections, not for this issue. Other
okay.
sections may need to be reworded because we're addressing a reorganization. But as I think about it, I don't think we're going to have to do extra work. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think if
yeah.
we're jumping the gun on something that
right.
we will try to attack later. So.
Yep. Good point. No, I think we're okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments?
I'm sorry, Joelle. I'll get you real quick. One quick. At the top in the motion. Oh. Well, anyway, I guess this is kind of a technical detail that's maybe not necessary. At the last sentence of the motion, herein should be one word, right? Yeah.
Thanks,
but
Fred.
I realize that's actually not going to go in the Constitution or the bylaws, so maybe that's actually not such a big thing. And then I have a question about the last section, Section 5. That, if I heard you correctly, that's special appointments to the administrative committee. So if the president or the vice president wanted to appoint a new person on the admin committee, they could do that. Is that correct?
No, actually, special appointments in this case refers to the other sections where it's been used, where they're making, this is the only place we've actually talked about special appointments. So say Pip says, all right, Brad, you need to go to Staff Alliance, and you're working on Staff Alliance. You've just been made part of the administrative committee to report back that information. Does that make sense?
Okay. So if you are one of these appointments, then you were going to be on the administrative
right.
committee.
Or if, for example, a new position comes up and they say, I'm going to make a special appointment, you're going to take care of communications for the next 3-4 months, then you would need to come to the administrative committee as well for those discussions.
One just to maybe generate a little discussion and also seek to provide some more input to Walker. One potential change to this motion could be for Section 4AI and Section 4BI serve as representative on Staff Alliance or make a special appointment to serve on Staff Alliance in their place and at their pleasure. Expectations of all Staff Council representatives to Staff Alliance will include regular reports to Staff Council meetings and Staff Council officers.
repeat that last part, Juella?
Expectations of all staff council representatives on Staff Alliance will include regular reports at staff council meetings and to the staff council officers.
Are you proposing section 4AI and 4BI?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have some ideas on the table right now. I guess I see two options. We could make an amendment to the motion that's on the table, or we could bring it back to committee and talk about it and refine it and bring it to the staff council in May. So thoughts on direction?
I would suggest that we send it back to committee because it also we haven't addressed the withdrawal, if you wanted to withdraw that appointment. So I would suggest sending it back to committee and having them do a little bit more work on it and getting a little bit more feedback.
Maybe we just need a line in here to clarify special appointments are made by the president or vice president and serve at their pleasure. In fact, that's exactly what Juella was saying here a moment ago, or recommending a moment ago, that adding on to section 4AI and BI in the appropriate place, that you include the clause that they serve at their pleasure, indicating that they can terminate them at any point in time.
Well, I think we've had some good suggestions, Walker, for this, and I anticipate that if we do bring it back to committee, it'll be a short process in getting it fine-tuned. So I think at this point that would be my suggestion, so we could move on.
I'd like to ask real quick if there are any further comments online.
Yeah, thank you. Any further comments online about this proposal?
None, thank you.
No, thank you.
None, thanks.
None, thank you.
Okay, thank you. We have such a polite group today. I guess I would recommend that we bring it back to committee and hear about this in May if there's no opposition to that. And Walker, are you willing to work on it a little bit more? Great, thank you. And thank you for your work on this. I think this is going to be a really nice change.
Yeah.
With that, I'd like to switch back to the remarks by Chancellor Rogers so we don't take up too much of his time, and welcome the Chancellor.
Thanks, and good morning, everyone. Always appreciate the opportunity for some interaction with the staff council. Coming off the legislative adjournment this week, we had a pretty good legislative session for the university as a whole and for UAF as a whole, both in the operating and capital budget. Operating budget went far beyond what the governor had proposed, with money for the advising, for the vet med, for a couple of other new programs, in addition to the 50% of pay raise funding that the governor had put in and the continuation of the honors program the governor had put in. Capital budget also really remarkable, where the governor had just had the single item of deferred maintenance, the $37.5 million we've requested for several years, with the approval by the legislature of half the funding for the UAF engineering building, Fairbanks campus, the money for the Kuskokwim campus, money for research, all in all, as good a capital budget as we've seen in years. Now, of course, that's going to mean the challenges of construction, and one of the things we're going to face this summer here on the Fairbanks campus is the effect of some of the prior year's approval of construction. I think people have probably seen the notices about the effect of both the utilidor and the sewer line replacement. We're going to have some parking challenges over the course of this summer. The sewer lines have been in imminent danger of failure. Their old wood stave pipe was installed in the 50s and 60s. It'll be good to get that out of the way, but hopefully everybody on the Fairbanks campus got notice of what some of the parking changes will be for the summer. We've also had to relocate the recycling area for the utilidor expansion. And facilities is going to work pretty hard to make sure people are aware of all the impact over the course of the year. I had the opportunity a couple weeks ago to visit both the Northwest and Chukchi campuses. It's always exciting to see how much is going on at our rural campuses, the impact that they have on the communities, and perhaps most important, the value of the partnership that they build in their communities. I'll go out to Kuskokwim and Bristol Bay for their commencements in a couple weeks, in addition to attending the Fairbanks commencement. So an opportunity, I think, to visit with faculty and staff at four of our CRCD campuses. I have one correction I'd like to make to your agenda. Notes in the agenda on page 19, Staff Healthcare Committee says there's no tobacco policy in place at this time. Chancellor Rogers wants the surcharge. The actual is I've suggested the surcharge for new hires effective July 1 in lieu of no new hires of people who use tobacco. I think that the absolute ban on hiring of people who use tobacco creates some challenges for us in hiring, in particular, research faculty from overseas who brought in a fair bit of money. It'll cost us, may cost us more on the research side than it gains us on the healthcare side, but I don't think it's unreasonable for new hires for us to say there's a different healthcare set of healthcare insurance rates, much as we see in life insurance. You purchase life insurance, two different sets of rates. But again, would not favor that for all employees, but only for new hires, and as a backup to the proposal to exclude all completely. I listened to the last bit of discussion about trying to do a little bit of load balancing on the officers. Would encourage anyone who's thinking about running for one of the officer positions. You ought to assume that this is going to go into place. You don't have to take on all the work at once, from what I heard. I think there's general agreement there, but I would hope that no one would decide not to run because they're not sure whether or not they'll be able to appoint somebody else to represent them on Staff Alliance. It really is an important role and important that staff council have strong leadership. I rely on the leaders we meet monthly prior to these meetings. It's some of my best feedback over the course of the year. I would encourage anybody who's thinking about taking on that role to do so. And with that, let me just stop and be prepared to answer any. Next month, of course, we've got the staff appreciation. I want to express my appreciation again to everybody who's been working on this, looking over the schedule of workshops. I think we've got a good set again this year. If anyone has issues with supervisors not encouraging people to participate, if you'd let me know, I want to make sure that we continue to encourage all supervisors to let employees take advantage of this opportunity to advance skills and to have a day that recognizes the contributions of staff on the campus. I'll be available that afternoon for open Q&A on any issues of interest to any of the staff. And with that, let me stop and answer any questions or respond to any issues that people want to raise.
Gary?
Oh, Brian, I just can't resist. You were talking about the pay raises. What was the final outcome?
The legislature included the funding for the 50% of the pay raise money requested by the Board of Regents, essentially the same as the governor, the same as the board approved last November.
Okay, so we had requested 3.5%, if I remember.
Yes.
And they funded half of that.
Yes.
So 1.75 then.
No, the university has to come up with, through reallocation, the other half of the money.
Okay.
And so, and that's been the case. And, you know, in recent years, we've gotten as high as 60%, but the legislature has essentially told us from now on, any pay, we'll fund half of it. And so certainly some portion of the remaining can be paid by federal grants and contracts. The rest, the rest we have to make up either through enrollment growth that brings in new tuition or through reduction of staff, program, or services to pay the rest.
Okay, or improved efficiency, however.
Yeah, improved efficiency, though, is essentially If we can improve efficiency, that means we either need less staff or less contracted services or goods. So in one way or another, it will be reductions elsewhere in the budget.
Okay. And obviously the administration committed to that when they put forth the budget.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
This is Robert Mackey at Chukchi. I just wanted to publicly thank Chancellor Rogers for his visit out here. I think it was actually 2 weeks ago, and I want to say that all of our staff was excited to see him and Vice Chancellor Joseph, and we feel very fortunate to have a chancellor that values the rural campuses enough to make an effort to come out once a year. I know that Chancellor Rogers has to hear at least me personally complain a lot, but I do want to go ahead and extend this compliment, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, and I just want to convey that message from the staff and myself to Chancellor Rogers personally.
Thanks, Robert.
Chancellor Rogers, I have a question. It seems like the budget is walking well through the process, and the university is probably optimistic, as it should be. What are some of the internal and external or external forces that have developed this year to make it a good and positive year? Are there things that we're doing well? Is it a set of events that's kind of set externally? And why are we seeing this positive outcome?
I think it's a combination of both internal and external issues. Externally, it's a lot easier when the state's sitting on billions of dollars of surplus for them to consider spending some of it. That's probably the biggest influence. I think second, the level of cooperation by external constituencies, faculty, and staff working together has made a big difference. So perhaps the most notable one there is on the engineering building, where UAF and UAA decided early on we're going to work together. We've had multiple joint meetings of the UAA Engineering Advisory Committee with the UAF Engineering Advisory Committee, working with external supporters to highlight the need for engineers in the state and the fact that both Fairbanks and Anchorage together need new work. So working together on that would be one. I think a second. Also, external constituencies make the biggest difference. It's always good when they hear from internal constituencies, but they know we all have a vested interest in it. But during the teleconference on the capital budget, there was testimony from Nome, Anchorage, Juneau, Seward, Unalaska, maybe one other location, from people not affiliated with the university, asking for support for the university's capital budget request for ocean acidification research. That's an example. Now, that took a lot of work to make sure we had those constituencies there. Ann Ringstad working together with the folks at SFOS, and just making sure people are aware, here's when you need to testify, here's the issue that's up there. We got money. The first time we've had a capital budget support for specific research in the university capital budget that we had asked for. It was a coordinated effort there, I think. I think that staff and faculty have been very good in terms of the communication with the legislature, letting them know what our interests are. And so the combination of aligned internal constituencies, external constituencies, and a legislature that had funds to spend all worked well.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the Chancellor?
This is Robert Mackey again. Chancellor Rogers, you mentioned efficiencies, and my concern is, and you kind of alluded to it, but I'm kind of wondering at this point, does it appear that there might be another, that there's a likelihood or even a remote possibility of layoffs in order to secure the funds needed to for the University of Alaska to come up with their funds to to pay for the pay raises.
I'm not aware of any. There's certainly no broad range plan. Absolutely, we're within an expected level. There may be, as there have in the past, isolated units that a combination of what's happening with their other funding sources leads to layoffs, or perhaps more likely, people who are on term positions not having the term renewed. I know there are a couple of areas that are heavily dependent on federal funds. The federal budget is in far more challenging shape, and so there may be units where lack of federal funds could lead to some terms not being renewed. That's happened in the past over the years, and it's highly variable depending on the funding. But I think I'm aware of two individuals that have that issue on the term as of today, and that one's been a long time coming, and they've known that for about a year and a half. So other than the two, I'm not aware of any either plans or likely circumstances. You know, we really do have a challenge. There are some units that only have a small portion of their funding is state general fund, and their non-state funds don't increase to cover the cost of pay. Let me give an example. KUAC, the fact that we have to come up with half of the money for pay raises at KUAC doesn't automatically trigger the Corporation for Public Broadcasting raising their grant. In fact, it's headed more likely in the other direction over time. The same with private contributions. We just don't have a revenue source to make that up. In the academic unit, we have that opportunity through tuition increases and enrollment growth. In research units whose research volume is increasing, we have the opportunity to make that up with indirect cost recovery. But the units that don't have other sources of funds that increase automatically, we have a challenge. Cooperative extension is another one where the federal funds for cooperative extension haven't been increasing. And so over time, a funding 50% of pay raises creates a challenge in any of those kinds of units. And that's part of what the leadership of each unit has to do in balancing whether they keep positions vacant longer when they come up, whether they reduce staffing over time, whether they have the capacity even to reduce other expenses.
Thank you, Chancellor Rogers. It's a relief to hear that there's at least no expectation that that layoffs will be necessary. I hope, though, if things change, you'll keep us notified.
Certainly. If I could ask, and I apologize, because I'm not really familiar with the topic, but you know, on the subject of finding efficiencies, I've been given to understand that with the across-the-board increases we've been doing for the last few years, that means that if someone leaves their position, a new person who's hired into that position gets hired at the same rate. You know, whereas if they had been across-the-board, you know, inflationary increases and merit or longevity increases, we would see a slightly reduced rate for that person. Is there any pressure to try and change that? You know, could we see any more efficiency if we had, and I know this is at the UAS level, but you know, would that help with finding, you know, funds for pay raises? In a circumstance where you have what I would consider a complete pay structure, that issue of when a vacancy arises, you're able to hire in at a lower step, does create some of the ability to fund pay raises. To me, a complete pay structure has elements of merit, of market, of longevity, and of cost of living. And over the 30 years I've been associated with the university in management level or governance positions, we've sometimes done two of those. I think we once did three. I don't think we've ever had all four elements. And it's really a balancing of what can you afford and what can you get from the legislature. One of the challenges we have is that traditionally state government self-funded all of the SEP increases. They didn't ask for new funding from the legislature. They only asked for new funding for across-the-board increases. So we started getting to the situation where the legislature said, university, we're not going to fund your SEP increases anymore. We'll only fund you when you get for the across the board. So our philosophy changed. Really, if we could get new money if we asked for across the board, and we couldn't get new money if we did SEP increases, we went to where the money, where we could get the new money. So as a result, any SEP increases have been internally funded. And so the SEP increase that we did in January of this year, that mid-year SEP for this year, that was totally self-funded. There was no new money for it. So it really, there's a discouragement in the budgeting process for going for a solution that would actually create some give in the funding process. So you are onto something. It is an issue. I think a lot of us would like to see a return to a multi-part pay structure, but in the current legislative fiscal environment, the only way for us to do that ends up with a higher pressure for staff reductions and reallocation, and we've avoided that so far.
One last quick question, Gary, and then we're going to move on.
Thank you, Gary, here. A couple of months, I think it was at our staff council forum that we held here, I was asking the question about the number of temporary employees versus permanent employees, and I don't know, I had a call from Ian asking about it, but I never heard any feedback on that, so I didn't know where we stand. In light of some of this discussion over efficiencies and stuff, of course, temporary employees are more at will and limited to 6 months. So that, I don't know if that's any flexibility, but it'd be kind of interesting to hear what the real number is.
Yeah, I still need to get that number. I don't have it off the top of my head. It does provide more flexibility. It creates more challenges in terms of recruitment and retention issues. And so my preference is, when we have a job that we expect to be permanent, that we not try to use terms to do it. There are positions that are funded from unique sources that aren't continuing are very appropriate for a term position. But for other things that we expect to be ongoing, they're not appropriate for a term position.
Okay. Thank you, Chancellor Rogers. With that, we'll move on to get back to the unfinished business. Just like to remind people that we have elections in May, and if people are interested in running for president and vice president, now would be a good time to make that known. You can contact either me or Duella at any time if you want to talk about what the job entails, and I'm sure Duella would echo my thoughts of whatever support you feel like you need. We're happy to give. You want to say anything about that?
I just wanted to add, actually, listening to Chancellor Rogers, what you just heard here is what Pips and I enjoy once a month. It's a challenging and productive and learning conversation we have with him every month, and I want to say that's one of the benefits of serving as an officer. That's all I wanted to add.
Any questions or comments about elections?
Is there a nomination, end date, or can people be nominated at the May meeting?
Okay. Yeah, I remember we did that last year. Yeah. Okay, so we'll move on to healthcare update. I'll let maybe Duella, you want to talk about healthcare, where we are, and maybe we've already kind of talked a little bit about it, but.
Right. I'm not sure that the Staff Healthcare Committee has met. They've met recently. Yes, Mary Sue?
Yes, and the minutes are attached to this.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure, honestly, what they're working on at the staff healthcare level. The report, I know the Staff Alliance is looking at that patient advocate advocacy program. But beyond that, the biggest issue for us right now is the healthcare task force because of the urgency, and we want to have a when people, you know, are looking, as I was this last weekend, through my open enrollment packet, I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do here? What are the choices? And obviously there's really only one choice. But then as a governance member, my next reaction is, what is this going to do to our cost of health care July 1, 2013? Right now the health care task force is my focus. Melody is the chair of staff health care committee, and we meet again in May, not until May, but we'll hear more then.
Staff health care committee?
No, Alliance.
Okay.
And I'm sure we'll hear from Mary Sue later about the staff health care committee. I also wanted to ask Walker quickly, an update on the calculator that he and Gary have been working on. There is a nice draft of it out there, and I think we're waiting for one final review by Erica, or that's what I understand based on the emails that I've received. So
we've actually been in communication with Erica,
okay,
and we're working with a slight calculation error.
Okay.
So I've written her earlier today and asked that we be able to talk. She's finally back in the office after being gone 4 days or so. She had been in some email communication with us, but it's not as effective as being able to do something, change it, and have her immediate feedback. So I would expect in the next day or two that we're able to release it.
Great. And I think the online information for open enrollment just came out on Monday. It went active. So I think it'll be important to get out this week, but I don't think we're behind, and really appreciate both of your work on that. I know it's been I know Walker's done a lot, but Gary, getting it started too, both of you, thank you for your efforts on that.
So can you explain what it is that you're working on briefly for the group?
Yes. What we've come to, the original idea was to try to help people make decisions based on what they may or may not know about what they're spending this year in healthcare. So what it does is allows you to enter some arbitrary amounts that would be your estimates of what you would be spending, and you'd be able to select which coverage plan that you're looking at, and then give you a side-by-side comparison of what the expected total cost is to you for that year with healthcare. So it shows you the 500 plan, the 750 plan, and the HDHP or the 1250 plan side-by-side, so that you can see if you paid the annual premium for each of those, and if you entered in, you know, your effective tax rate, it would take those values and give you this is what you may really be spending on healthcare. So for those of you who like the 500 plan, you'll probably quickly see that many of those expenses are unneeded, and you'll have a much lower overall healthcare costs with one of the other plans. There's just a little bit of tweaking, and I think I've gotten some comments back that, yeah, there's only one plan to choose from now, but it doesn't incorporate all the elements. Please keep that in mind. So if you're looking at orthodontics, or if you're looking at dental, or if you're looking at, I think there are one or two other ones that, well, yeah, we don't have anything specifically in there about that, but those are the pieces for the numbers, building a solid estimate, but we don't have all the pieces of the puzzle,
right,
nor can we ever really.
Right, right. So I think it's important that everyone understand, and that you include in the communications on this tool, that one, it's a tool to estimate your potential costs for health care for the coming year. It's just a complementary tool to the information that the administration puts out. So two things I would add to that communication. When you're putting the word out on this tool, that you list those caveats, that you list, by the way, this isn't exact, you know.
We've done
yeah,
that.
A great disclaimer. Great. Then the other
caveat
thing.
Caveat the heck out of it.
Then the next step is, once you all as representatives get this, that you spread it far and wide, is another tool that that governance has put together for making, you know, smart decisions. Something that we've heard is our ability is questioned on this.
Okay, thanks, Walker, and I'll work with you to finalize that when you need my help. So, thank you again. Let's try to move through these next couple of items. The employee tuition benefit update, I'm not sure we have a lot to say on that right now. Our voice has been heard at Staff Alliance. Staff Alliance has communicated our wishes, and it's a fairly common voice being heard around our community. I don't think we have anything new from last month, but just wanted to bring that up. If people have questions or comments about it, I don't have any new news on that right now.
I would just add that I'm not sure. I don't believe the Board of Regents took action at their meeting last week. Their next meeting is June. So it's my intent this afternoon when I talk to Donald Smith to ask him where they are with this and to have a conversation with them regarding it and encouraging them to reconsider, especially the applying SAP to employees.
So we do. I think we have a strong and common voice across the system right now. Tobacco-related issues, we have gotten confirmation that HR is not actively using this as a tool during the hiring process right now. That was some question at the last meeting, so we have confirmed that that is not the case. Just related to our communication on tobacco, one of the things that I think that I've learned from the solicitation of feedback on the Google forms is that it's most helpful. The forms have been most helpful when there's a consistency among units when we're going to compile the data. And so there were several units that sent out great questions, requesting feedback from their constituents, and that was really useful. I think a more effective tool is to make sure that as a group we are agreeing on what should go out, because when we go to compile data, it's much easier to compile data where the questions are consistent among units. So just a little side note, that's all great information that we have, but in the future I'd like to work on having a common form.
Yeah, well, and it seems even with the calculator that gets put out there, it should go to everybody, shouldn't it? Is everything going to get filtered through reps to pass on? Because then things get couched in different ways, and we keep talking about having one central communication. I think that's efficient, too. Plus, you're assured that you are providing the correct information to people. So,
yeah, that's a really good point, Debbie. And Nicole's been working really well with marketing and communications to get information out to all staff members rather than going through reps, because there seemed to be a breakdown in that system, as we've learned over a couple of years, but it's kind of come to light this year. So
yeah, we keep talking about doing it that way. So
yeah. Well, that's part of the idea of the reorganization and having a communications person at the executive level is to try to address those concerns. But I don't know if Nicole wants to add anything, but she's done a really good job of communicating with marketing and communications to get these important things out to our constituents. And I'll go one step further with the code of conduct issue. That not only went out to our staff, it went out to staff statewide, because we have a good relationship with our counterparts at UAS, UAA, and statewide. And so we were really able to capture a lot of feedback on that system level.
Yeah, I don't think I've sent anything out. I've sent out a lot of email, but I don't think I've sent anything out specifically to reps to pass on, unless it was requested by the sender in, I guess, the last month or so. But there are some challenges to using the marketing and communications listserv. Number one, it has to pass all of their specifications, only no attachments, certain things like that. Plus, it does produce feedback from rural campuses and things like that for issues that don't, they're included in that as well,
and
as our non-staff council representatives.
Definitely notice the step up in activity there in the cornerstone and that sort of thing. That's great.
And just a final word on the tobacco issue. The Chancellor received all of the feedback from all of you, everybody who collected feedback. Nicole consolidated that, and he has a big folder of all of our feedback, so he's well aware of staff's feelings about the tobacco issues. Mary Sue?
Just one note of clarification. The information that I gathered was probably different than what John did, because I didn't send out a survey. I was being on staff health care committee. Mm-hmm. Our charge on the committee as members were to reach out to people and find out what they thought would be incentives and motivations to help people who may be using tobacco to give that up. So we weren't really trying to find out if people preferred the smoke-free camp or the tobacco-free campus compared to the tobacco-free hiring policy. So that's a little bit of a difference in what I was doing.
Agreed. Okay, I think if there's no further questions, we're going to take a short break. It is 9:52. Let's take a three-minute break and be back at 9:55, and we'll just be 5 minutes behind at that point. Okay, great. Welcome back. We're gonna start new business, and if it looks like we're gonna run late, I will ask our guest speakers to speak so we don't hold them up. But let's start with new business. We have nominations for 2012 Outstanding Staff Council Achievement Awards up online right now. So please take time to fill something out and nominate one of your fellows who's doing an extraordinary job. There's certainly lots of people who have put lots of time into our organization this year, and lots of opportunity for nominating. So please do that. What's the deadline, Nicole? Okay. Check the deadline or check the website for the deadline. It's not going to be open much longer. Staff Affairs petition. Mary Sue, do you want to talk about that?
It was sent out to all of the reps and the alternates. It's just pretty much states. Let me try to find it in my. It just kind of is a voice for staff to have with the president, with the chancellor. We created it in Staff Affairs to get out, because when the cost came out, there were a lot of staff that were really upset, and they didn't feel like they had a voice or were valued. So we came up with this petition. We've distributed it out to the rural campuses as well as to UAF. I've given the signed copies that I have up to this point. I've given the originals to UKIP to further on. And at this point, we currently have 168 signatures, but we are still collecting them. But it was amazing. I will say, though, it was amazing how many people, how many staff members didn't want to sign it because they were concerned about the repercussions of what the administration would do with those that had signed the petition. And you could tell them that, you know, you have this freedom, but in reality, their general thought is if the university wants to get rid of them, they can find a way to do it without it coming across as they're doing it because they signed the petition. So there were quite a few people that didn't want to sign it for that reason.
And thanks, Mary Sue, for your work on this. And I do have I have the originals.
Yes.
Are we expecting more, or are we done with?
Oh no, we're going to continue. We just wanted to give you something that you could get started with. We'll continue to gather those as we can, as people want to sign it. It will continue to be open. It was also posted on the blog site, and there's quite a bit of conversation on the blog site with regard to. What happened at our last staff council meeting, and with regard to the healthcare and the tobacco issue. So if you get a chance, I would suggest that you.
Okay, I have not looked at the blog site in the last month, so I will do that.
There's a lot of something.
Okay, so if you have petitions, please get them to Mary Sue to be forwarded to me. The attached proposed code of conduct, which we also had lots of feedback on. I think we're up to over 600. Last time I looked, we were just under 600, so I imagine by this time we're up over 600 responses to our form. That's going to close on Friday, and I will write a summary report and forward that to Staff Alliance and all of you, so you know what the comprehensive feedback looks like. Overwhelmingly opposed to the code of conduct, as you can imagine. I know Juella has had some communication with some of the faculty on the proposed the code of conduct, and maybe I'd ask her to communicate what she would like to as where this issue stands right now.
Sure. Apparently, before every other Board of Regents meeting, the Statewide Academic Council meets with the President's Cabinet, and it's my understanding that at that meeting, President Gamble effectively withdrew this code of conduct. It is his intent to work with governance in the fall to create a set of institutional values rather than this code of conduct. So I think we can say that the response from governance was resounding and quick and obviously very effective. He got the message very quickly that this was the wrong approach, and although he hasn't officially it's my understanding. He certainly hasn't announced it to all those that he mailed it out originally, but it effectively he's withdrawn this. But you can expect some work on institutional values in the fall with governance. I want to echo Pips's comments earlier about the effectiveness of our latest rounds of communicating and getting feedback from employees. I think it was a 1-2 combination of the less than flattering news on this code of conduct and the quick response by staff, especially, that caused him to go, oops. So I think you guys are great, and you got the word out, and then you took it back, and I want to say raw. We did this one right.
Joella?
Yes, sir.
This is Robert Mackey, and I just wanted to say most of the stuff that's in that was in that proposed code of conduct is actually common sense stuff that they can fire you for anyway. I don't really have anything for it. If we wanted, what I'm getting at here is that it's obvious that they're going to come down with something. I think we should get ahead of this and maybe have staff counsel create what we believe to be the code of conduct. And that way we can address other problems that we believe are also there. For example, a code of conduct that we will be, that our members will be treated with respect, and that includes from supervisors on down. We can work on the language, but there's more issues to work on that I think that if we got proactive and came up with a code of conduct that we felt was respectful, applicable, and actually valuable, I think that it would be a good use of our time. That's just my opinion.
I absolutely agree to the change in approach. What I am going to suggest, however, is that President Gamble hasn't made it officially known, certainly to Staff Alliance, his intent, and that I'll have this again as a piece in my conversation this afternoon with his Chief HRO Officer, Donald Smith, and I think what we would do is at the system-wide level, at the Faculty Alliance and Staff Alliance, we'll sit down and outline a strategy for getting input and go from there. At this point, Robert, I'm hesitant to make any commitments because I'm not sure yet the process.
I understand. I just wanted to supply that comment. And if there is some sort of a subcommittee that works on this, I'd be happy to help with that.
You bet, and thank you for that, for your willingness to serve on that. It's also my hope, that I'll take Pips's summary of the survey and I'll take that to the Alliance level, and it'll be passed on to whatever group ultimately takes this on. I will ask the President if he wishes to read all of those informative and wonderful comments.
So just a quick, again, thank you all for your feedback on that. I think we'll move on to the next item, which is internal committee membership. Just a reminder for everybody that we expect everybody to be actively participating in one of our standing committees. There are currently 2 people who are not signed up for an internal committee, and we'd like to take care of that this month. Each committee is actively working on various projects. So if you are not currently on an internal committee, please see me or Nicole and get signed up for one of those. But thank you. The vast majority of people are working, and we appreciate that. The final agenda item for under new business is the status of internal committees, and I asked Nicole to put that on the agenda just to talk briefly about the idea of our standing committees. We have talked in the past about perhaps combining staff affairs and staff advocacy. And Debbie, I don't know if you want to talk about this at all or if you have current thoughts on that. It's been maybe a couple of months since we've talked about it, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I would like the opportunity for anybody to comment on the structure of how we're set up right now with our internal committees. If people don't have comments, that's fine too, but I wanted to just put it back on the table for comment as we're thinking about our strategic direction and moving forward. Deb?
I just have been swamped at work, and so I don't have a lot of time to do anything, which I apologize for yet again. I still think it'd be a good idea to have the advocacy group join with the affairs group. I think it would. I just think they're doing the same kind of thing to a certain degree. There should be some subset that's more advocacy focused, but that could be within that committee, and then maybe we can get more involvement in both groups.
Other comments? Gary?
Just quickly, I've seen both advocacy and staff affairs ebb and flow based on what's before them and the amount of time that people have. You can certainly fill out both committees with lots of stuff to do that will be helpful for staff. But if you don't have that in particular time, then you're in a lull period. So rather than making structural changes, I think just find some way of accommodating the particular situation, and then the pendulum will swing again.
Well, yeah, I appreciate your thoughts on you know, maybe the sine curve of of effort, you know, as a group that's put forth. And also, I think I would reiterate with that, with the focus too, because right now I think advocacy kind of has an internal focus of what are we going to do for staff members and how are we going to get staff members involved and show them the university and make them aware of everything that's happening here. And, you know, our bylaws talk about the fact that we are also advocating staff at an external level as well to the community. So that it's a piece of the advocacy that since I've been on staff council anyway, hasn't been a focus. So I can appreciate your thoughts on that, Gary, and just the ebb and flow of both the focus and the energies.
Well, could I just read a couple of the pieces from the bylaws, which were the original charges for these? So the two committees we're talking about are the Staff Affairs Committee, and the other one is entitled University Advocacy. So it goes beyond just staff persons on that one. In the Staff Affairs Committee, it lists out the policies and what the group should work on as benefits, compensation, grievance procedures, position evaluation and hiring procedures, other human resource issues pertaining to staff, and any matter which affect the health and welfare of the staff as outlined in UAS Staff Council Bylaw Section 2, Article C. For university advocacy, what we have listed for it is the committee shall have the following responsibilities: organize events and functions to help make the public aware of the value of the university staff, as well as student and faculties. Organize events and functions that increase staff morale and awareness of the university, and other items to be determined by the committee on an annual basis. So I just wanted to make sure everyone knew what the original charges were so that they could consider this in context. I don't disagree with it, but I want everyone to know what the original charges of both of the groups were.
Thanks, Walker. And I think also, you know, the external forces that we have working on staff council, certainly the issues that we've been dealing with this year have predicated that a lot of our energies go to staff affairs right now because we have big issues on the table that staff affairs is addressing. So I think that's another external factor to our committee system that is working to kind of shape what our system looks like right now. So I appreciate people's thoughts and being able to bring it up. So thank you. If you have further thoughts, let me know. I didn't mean for this to be a long, extended conversation, but wanted to get people's feedback on that. So thank you. So with that, we will move on to our guest speakers. And I'm very happy to introduce Ross Imbler and Sue Sugai, Annual Giving Coordinator and Associate Director for the Center of Global Change. And then I will leave the floor to them.
Good morning. Everyone hear me?
Try it again, Ross.
It's on.
Hello?
Yep, okay. There you go. You
all
just right. Got to hold it close.
Very close. Good morning. My name is Ross Embler, and I'm the annual giving coordinator for the Office of Development here on campus. We have started off our third annual employee giving initiative, and so we wanted to get the word out by coming in today and speaking to you all. We are trying our best to give employees the opportunity to give to areas on campus, to students on campus that is their passion, what they want to give to. I'm a two-time alum of UAF and an employee as well, and I give to the communication department because that's who gave me my master's degree, and I felt a need when I was there as a student to give to that. I felt a need when I was there because there were certain things that I wanted to do with research that there just wasn't any funding for. So as an employee, I have the means now to go ahead and give back so that students have more opportunities than I have when I was there. So we really want to kind of drive home the point that employees do have the ability to give hopefully some amount of money, and you can give to your passion, whatever department, a program, a scholarship, whatever, you know, really drives you and what gets you going. We want to provide that opportunity for you to do so. Last year, 15% of UAF employees gave almost $250,000. So there's definitely some impact that's going on, and we really appreciate that, and students absolutely are the ones benefiting from that. I've brought in some paperwork in the back for you all. If you're interested, you can do by employee deduction. It's all charitable, so you can take it off on your taxes as a deduction. And so that information's back there. This year, every year, we have co-chairs that come in that volunteer to get the word, spread the word, and to highlight certain funds on campus that are the passions of other employees on campus. This year's focus is the Robert Bellows Global Change Research Endowment, and our co-chairs are Susan Sagai and Glenn Judet. And with that, I will go ahead and have Susan speak about her passion at this point. Thank you.
And Susan, you have to pull the microphone really close for the our online guests to hear.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm Susan Sagai, and I'm a long-term university employee. I don't want to say what, but I figure I've been here half my life. And I'm, like a lot of you, I was a staff employee for most of my time here. And I'm what's called a term-funded staff employee. So my salary is dependent upon research funds. And so research is my passion, but it has a really direct impact on all of you. And I'm going to pass around a little article that appeared in Nature, which is one of the international science magazines that comes out weekly. And it's written about how this is a crunch time for research and why, if we don't have funding coming in from the various federal agencies, it's going to mean a lot of things aren't going to be done. And the University of Alaska Fairbanks has been highly competitive in these kinds of things, but they're going to have to be even more so with the funds become less. And one of the ways that we prepare our students to be more successful for things like this is the Center for Global Change research competition that we do every year, where students have to submit a proposal to us that then I peer review by sending it out to experts throughout the country. And then we have a panel that sat last week and decides which of these students should be funded, of which right now our success rate is about a third. And of these students is the author of this paper that goes around. He's one of our former awardees. Last night I was at a book signing at UA Press that Ross Cohen was giving a talk on his new book on the Manhattan. He's one of our previous awardees. So these people are highly successful in terms of getting grants, in terms of going out and leveraging funds that are coming into the university. And why this is important to you is that when I write a grant, I have to put in addition to my salary, the 50% that covers our benefits, which we're all talking about in terms of how our health benefits are going up. I have to put in a number for our leave benefits. And then on top of that, we have what we call F&A, which is our facilities and administration thing, which covers the cost of the staff people, the IT people, the fiscal people, the things that help support our research enterprise. So it really does help staff to, you know, support research in itself. And one thing in writing grants, you have to do oftentimes indicate cost sharing. How are you contributing something to this research effort? And so what I'm asking you today is not necessarily to contribute large amounts of money to research efforts, but like to our the particular endowment that we're sponsoring or highlighting this year, if you were able to give, say, $10 to it, it allows us to go forward and say, we had this many people, not how many dollars, but how many people that thought that this was worthy of their investment in terms of their university. And these people that we're funding through this competition, a large percentage of them are staying in Alaska. They want to investigate research projects here because they have to be interdisciplinary. They have to be affected the Arctic or the subarctic. And I have some newsletters in the back that explains a little bit about the endowment and also a little bit about some of the students that we funded recently, two of whom have had books out by UA Press. So they are doing things that are important to all of us. That's all I want to say. It really counts involvement, not dollars. Just the fact, you know, like KUAC, your vote is really important to us because then I can go to my sponsors and say, look, this many people were willing to say, offer two of my lattes towards this. And that's what we're asking, not, you know, a lot of money. So thank you.
Well, thank you both. Are there questions for Ross or Sue?
I would like to say one thing. I have to attend all the Board of Regents meetings, and it was the time before the last one. There was a young man there that presented, and he had received funds from the center. And his project was amazing, and he just gave an awesome presentation. And I had not heard of this, of your center before, and was amazed when I went and looked at it, what it does, and the opportunities it provides for students. I have to say I was very impressed and pleased that we have a group like yours here on campus.
Yeah, we beg and borrow for money from various places, but like everything, our state appropriation has not increased. And one of the difficulties we have, since we're interdisciplinary, I don't have a dean or director that I report to, so therefore when the chancellor has his cabinet meetings or when the president gets together, we're not at the table because we're too small in terms of that, because we really do leverage things as well as we can. But our students do go places, and I think that they reflect very favorably on all of us in the room.
Susan, and you have a do you have a weekly newsletter that comes out?
No, it's just a yearly. And
oh, okay.
There's bunches
okay.
of them back then.
Okay.
I even brought more than he brought. So
great.
You'd
well,
like
thank
to
you.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Any final words, Ross, on the campaign?
No, and I just want to really stress the point. It's participation is what counts. It really does. We just small amounts. If you can't, we all know. Trust me, we all know about, you know, the healthcare initiatives and all the stuff that's going to be hitting us all pretty hard here pretty soon. But it is participation, and you know, just a $10, $25 paycheck, small two lattes, it's really appreciated, and it does impact the students. It goes just straight to the students.
Well, thank you very much both for all the work that you're doing, and thanks for being here today. So with that, we'll move on to committee reports and start with staff affairs and Mary Sue.
Just point of order. We did have a note to sustainability.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm sorry. I made a note to myself. And I wanted to ask Bear to come and give a report on all the sustainability issues that are happening around campus because he gave a great report to a leadership workshop that I went to. And we had too full an agenda, so I mentioned to Nicole that I'd like to do that in May. So we will invite Bear for May.
Because I noticed also we do have a sustainability rep. Mayanna Bean is on the sustainability.
The Rise Board.
Still, yeah, Rise. It's a totally different acronym.
Yep.
But and we don't really ever hear from that. And
I know, and it's probably me dropping the ball and not connecting with her. And I know Brad has mentioned it several times to me, like Pips, call Mayanna. So I will promise I will call Mayanna. And it's I hear what you're saying. It's just one of those little details that does not rise to the top of my brain. So
I think it's what needs to rise to the top of Mayanna's brain, not yours.
Mayanna's what?
It needs to rise to the top of her brain to know that she's representing us. And
I fully agree, and I will make it a priority to contact her. So thank you both for reminding me.
Pips, maybe this should be something that we consider in revising our portion where we've introduced these special appointments.
Yes, I agree.
It may be an administrative committee report, or it may be a requirement, but depending on what it is.
Exactly. And we've touched on this several times, but we really do need a report back to staff council if a staff member from staff council is going to be sitting on a committee. So point very well taken. I feel the same way, and I will.
One thing that might help is actually putting it on our agenda for external committee reports.
Is it not there?
Yeah, there. Okay. It's been there before.
Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's because it's not sustainability. It's the other acronym.
Thank you.
Okay. 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 Yep. Something that I need to look into.
Okay.
So thank you. Thank you, Gary. I mentally flipped on that one. So now we'll move on to Mary Sue and Staff Affairs.
Staff Affairs meeting for April 2nd. The minutes are attached to the agenda. We met on April 2nd. The majority of the meeting was revolving naturally around the health care costs, what we wanted to do as a committee, you know, how do we want to help staff get their voices out to the administration. We did talk about the tuition waiver, staff, and a couple of other things, but as you can imagine, the petition and the health care took the majority of it. So we also met on April 16th, and that was a brief meeting to kind of also discuss the tobacco issue and to discuss the tuition waiver. And we're going to come together as a group in May probably and kind of start trying to come up with something that is somewhat like SAP, except for it'll be directly with regard to staff. It'll be directly related to staff. And then we're going to kind of get the tobacco comments that have been provided to Nicole and talk about it within the committee and see, you know, just kind of have a discussion of where do we go from here, where that's regarding.
And I think you provided a really strong voice for staff counsel from staff affairs, and it seems like all the issues right now we have promoted our stance to Staff Alliance, and right now we're waiting to see what the next step is from the administration. So.
And that's the one thing I forgot to mention. With the petitions that that I provided to you today, we as a committee are requesting that you do take those forward, whether it be to Staff Alliance, to the administration, to the president, to all of them as far as we're concerned. Staff at this point are really, they're really feeling undervalued, and they think that their voices are not being heard, and so they really want to get it out there. And it was amazing to me once it got sent out how many people actually responded either via email or were at my office within the first 10 minutes of the message being sent out.
Thanks, Mary Sue. And I think it would be my intent to bring this both to the Chancellor and to Staff Alliance as the two avenues of connecting with the administration and the fact that they are both UAF and state system-wide issues. Thanks. Brad, do you want to talk about rural affairs?
Sure. Just to touch over a few of the things that are in the report. At our last meeting, we discussed the proposed reorganization, and we were curious about how the number of we know how the number of rural reps will be calculated according to the proposal, but how that would work, you know, practically. How would we calculate, you know, which employees are where, and then how many, you know, how many required reps from our rural campuses. Or possibly our rural sites would be on the board. So those are questions we had. And then we thought that, you know, if the reorganization does go through and we have an overall reduction of staff council members, we should have more face-to-face meetings, given the value of face-to-face meetings. You get to see everyone in the room. You can, you know, have conversations with them before and after the meeting. We think that adds a lot of value and you know, just two a year maybe isn't enough. So if we had fewer members, you know, on the group, maybe there'd be more opportunity for that type of meeting. The third thing is that we really like Mary Sue's blog, and someone suggested that a link to that blog might be part of, or a blog, you know, might be part of a regular communications email. And since I'm on the communications group, I'll carry that to our next meeting so we can maybe talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And one last thing that I found out recently, I talked to the state Department of Administration, the state group that is responsible according to state statutes for the cost of living survey, and asked them if there's a plan to do one in 2013 since it's supposed to happen every 5 years. The last one was 2008. And got a response. They said there's no money for it in FY13, but they're planning on one in FY14. And that's all I have.
Great, thanks, Brad. You guys are tackling some important issues, and thank you for taking the lead on those and keeping them alive.
Hey, Brad, I have a question for you.
Sure.
When you referenced FY14 being the time they're doing it, is this the university's FY or the state's, or are they on the same schedule? I don't know.
I think it's the same one.
Okay.
Yeah, the starting in FY14 and then a report possibly in January calendar year 2014. But the last one, the 2008 survey, if you go look at it online, you can see a timeline, and it was delayed by, I think, 6 months. So it seems reasonable that if the 2013 one is as big as the 08 one, it might be delayed.
Loud.
I'm sorry, we got some real loud music.
I think somebody has put the phone on hold, and it has really loud music that is covering over any speaking.
Progress there. We did a lot of work on the other one, though.
Thanks, Walker. Advocacy committee has not met this month, and we'll move on to external statewide committee reports. Does somebody from Staff Alliance Staff Healthcare Committee want to talk about what has been happening in the last month?
Can you guys hear us? Because those online had a lot of loud music. I don't know if you guys heard the same.
We heard a little blip, but it's. Oh, okay. Nicole turned it down. So if somebody could mute their phone, is that the request?
No, it's not a mute. Somebody put us on hold.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are you still experiencing the problem?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Kat. Staff Healthcare Committee met on March 29th, reviewed the patient care motion, talked a little bit about the tobacco policy and some of the reasons and past histories of why our health care is high as it is today. I'm sure you guys have our notes. It's an ongoing issue. It sounds like every committee's talking about it, which is great. And I hope that we can have open dialogue, especially with the healthcare task force that is planning to be met and go through that will help people on staff healthcare committee. We're here to help voice your concerns. And I think the biggest thing for me, being on the committee, other than what I've contacted with individuals, I really haven't received any input from anybody, so your voice is what moves us and directs us. So if I could just reiterate that, please contact my Carolyn Simmons, it looks like Mary Sue Dates, or Maria Russell, contact us and let us know, and one of us will bring it forward to the meeting. And we try to work as closely as we can with the Joint Healthcare Committee, too. So,
thanks, Kat, and thanks for your continued role with the Staff Healthcare Committee. Are there any questions for Kat? I assume everybody's been able to read the attachment. Okay, thanks, Kat. We'll move on to the Staff Alliance Compensation Committee. It's noted that they have not yet, Robert, they have not met this last month. Robert, do you have anything to add for the Compensation Committee? Are you still there?
No, I'm not even sure I made it to the last meeting, to be honest. I've been traveling the last 3 weeks. So I'm sorry, I don't have anything to report.
This is Maria.
Oh, hey, Maria.
Hey, so the compensation group broke out into some different, working groups, each taking on a different responsibility. A couple of those groups are still finalizing their resolution, and then the group will come back as a whole, and there will be 5 different recommendations presented to that group, which will then be discussed and then will be pushed out to all the groups to include Alliance. So, if you have any further questions.
Maria, when's the date of your next meeting?
So that's where it gets complicated. Erica Kowalski, who's the co-chair on that, she she's backing down from Staff Alliance, and I believe that she's given notice as to that, so that meeting needs to be rescheduled. So I will go ahead and do a complete group meeting, but I imagine I need to have a conversation with Joella, but I just found out.
She's giving you the thumbs up, so that's great. Thank you.
Okay. I can't see, so.
Brad, anything to add?
Oh, I just wanted to add that I believe Britton Anderson is an alt on that group.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Yeah, Maria, let's talk. This is Joella. Let's do talk maybe this week or early next week. And thank you for your help on all of this. And we haven't really resolved at the alliance level a replacement for Erica. No one stepped forward, so it may well be that I end up sitting in on the last couple of whole group meetings.
Okay, and I know that we were inviting you anyways. I just have to say that I'm very excited. Both Erica or I, we were both attending each of the meetings, each of the different working group meetings, and some of the recommendations are very exciting. So I think a lot of good productive work is being done. So positive.
Thanks, Maria. We really look forward to seeing what the outcome of that committee is, and thank you for taking on that additional role with Erica stepping down. Okay, we'll move on to external committee reports. Committee reports are attached if we have received them, but I see Gary waving to me.
Well, I'm not waving, but I did put a report in here in the agenda. What I want to just draw everybody's attention, particularly those that expect to work on Lower Campus this summer, it's going to be a challenge. Chancellor referred to it. There is a map on there showing how they're going to try to phase things. To give you an idea of the cost of the sewer project alone up South Chandler, it was the low bid came in at $1.15 million. So you're going to have to dig up a lot of dirt to make it worth that much money. It's going to be pretty disruptive. I talked to Scott McCray yesterday. He said that, in fact, they are parking Martin's group, and facilities are trying to work out what needs to happen for parking. Obviously, if they close the Nenana lot, people are going to be over at Taku instead. They're going to try to run expanded shuttles, is what I was told, and try to find ways to get there. There's no progress on the stairway instead of the luge run going down, but in summertime it should be less of an issue going down to Taku. I think the stairway came in at something like $650,000 to $700,000 to do something very similar to what they do down to facility services from the corner of Fennell Duckering. So there was no readily identifiable pot of money to pay for that. But it's still pretty high on their list because they realize there's a safety problem, perhaps. and so anyway, it's going to be a mess, and I'll probably make sure I stay up on West Ridge all summer and have fun, y'all. We have our share of challenges up there. We have a limited parking right now too, so misery loves company. But do take a look at the construction plans and try to plan your day accordingly. And the alternates are, of course, I saw something from Sustainability Outfit that they're partnering to try to come up with ride sharing, a little more automated way of trying to find ride shares. And we still get free bus access for those that are on bus routes. Find alternates around that, or take summer off, go 9 months. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. This is really useful. I have a question that you may not know the answer to, but the recycle dumpsters are now in the Taku lot.
That is true.
And it seems to me, this is just my personal feeling, that they make sense to be there. Like, it was really easy to get in, and they're near the landfill, or whatever we're supposed to, not the landfill,
right.
The dumpsters across the street. The transfer station,
Yeah.
Do you know anything about, is there a potential to leave them there, or am I missing something that?
No, they used to have the glass recycling there. There was back in the relative olden days, I guess, earlier in the century. They may end up staying there. Part of the challenge is for the sustainability group is that we're doing recycling for the whole community. And the more accessible they are, the harder they have time, harder they have keeping up with the collection of the stuff that gets collected to be recycled. And there's not an integrated burl system for recycling, so we're kind of providing a community service, if you will, through their efforts on the students' efforts, essentially on the sustainability side. So we'll see if they stay.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, it's a good point. They're more accessible, but then somebody's got to monitor them too. So.
Yep. Okay. Are there any other external committee reports that people would like to address verbally? As in the past, we allow people to talk about them, but attachments are there in case for everybody's review.
I do.
Yay! Who's that?
It's Nicole.
Oh.
I wanted to give a quick update on the Planning and Budget Committee. They've been meeting weekly, and I almost have the notes typed up. I just didn't get it to you guys in time, and they met yesterday, so I just figured, oh, well, I'll just talk and then submit it later. Currently what's going on is they're undergoing a reassessment of what PBB does, and they're creating subgroups to identify each need per the accreditation criteria. So for example, I'm under the capacity committee, and so under the capacity committee we need to develop a criteria for ranking capacity requests, developing rationale for prioritization per the theme that each group is given, and to figure out how to select top priorities budget-wise from the request submitted. The change has come at a long time coming per the chancellor and other people voicing concerns about the committee not quite doing what it's supposed to do. If anybody has any particular questions, please let me know. I'm kind of just keeping it very broad in the spectrum. They're considering different areas in regards to what needs to be changed due to increased energy costs, benefits changing, infrastructure needs, deficit units that reoccur like KOAC and athletics. They're trying to, in essence, just figure out a better system on how to rank the needs and better assess who should be getting the money. That's kind of where we are at the moment. I'm meeting with the capacity committee at the end of this week, so I'll have a better idea of where we're going from there.
So, Nicole, this is Joella. Can I ask you to say again who are the deficit groups?
Well, they're those are the items that they're reconsidering, but that's not a group per se.
Well, as I understand it, athletics is in the red, correct?
Yeah.
And KUAC has been in the red in the past. Are they again in the red this year?
They didn't per se.
They didn't identify.
They have them broken down by educate, prepare, research, engage, connect, and capacity in regards to the subcommittees.
Thanks, Nicole. And if you can provide a written report, I think there are several people who are interested in getting that, and we will post it on with the rest of the attachments.
Yes, I'm just about done with it.
Thank you very much. I know that was a short turnaround time, so thank you.
Thank you.
Any other external committee reports that people would like to address verbally? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to ad hoc committee reports. Ashley or Maria, are you online?
I am online.
Hello, Maria.
As I'm sure all of you noticed yesterday, the registration went out for Staff Appreciation Day. Please go on to the site. Please register. We're asking everyone to sign up for breakfast. It's an actual breakfast this year, sponsored by Pat Pitney. And then lunch. And then we have a series of different sessions. We have a couple of extra sessions, special sessions that go all day. We're going to do a photo scavenger hunt and wacky bowling in addition to frisbee golf. So there's lots of different activities for people to go out and do.
Our standard sessions include orientation, professional, and personal development. So go out, take a look. We're also looking for volunteers for the day before and the day of Staff Appreciation Day. We will have a volunteer coordinator start assisting here shortly. So anyone from this group who's interested in volunteering, if you can shoot me an email or stop by and talk to Nicole after the meeting today, she'll go ahead and write your name down. And then we'll have a bunch of various assignments. But it's shaping up really well for this year. We're pretty excited. Any questions?
This is Debbie Gonzalez. I don't know if it's my browser, but when I tried to go in and look at session detail, when it says closed session detail, it just popped me right out. The whole tab disappeared. So maybe it's me, but it happened twice. So you might want to look at your page and how it's put together. I don't know if anybody else has experienced
that.
It
did that to me too.
Wait, would you say that again?
When you go in and look at the detail of a particular session, there's a close the window button, and when you hit that, you bomb out of the whole thing and you have to go back and log back in. So something is not connected quite right on the setup to go back to the main grid from those detailed session descriptions.
I think what you're experiencing in this case is that, and I was definitely confused by it as well, all of the session information that says you're there is connected from the page you're on essentially. When you close that page, it didn't open a new window. So I think that's where some of the confusion comes in. It actually opened it directly on that same page. And
so you could be hitting the
back row. You've lost that. I'm
yeah,
not
so
saying that's the best way to do it. I'm just saying that's, I believe, how it works right now.
Right. So if two people have experienced great confusion on that, then it's not working.
Sure.
Hey, this is Jennifer Elhardin. I had the same problem, and my only kind of suggested rectification would be to change the wording on the actual button, because it does say close the window. So really you're saying close out my session when you really just want to go back. So maybe we could just take a look at that. But the registration seems really good. The only other comment I had was that there is no way in the beginning in the email that was sent out or on the registration site to that identifies which sessions are eLive unless you go to the schedule. So maybe on the actual registration page, there would be a little something next to it or icon or something that says this will be available eLive for all the people that are going to be at their desk or rule sites. That's the only thing I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. That's a great suggestion. Thanks for offering us.
Yeah, and there are only a couple of eLive sessions, so that might be something we can update, but maybe not. I'll have to talk to Walker afterwards.
Great. Well, thanks Maria, and thanks, Walker, for helping with the online stuff. I know it's a big job. Any other questions for Maria? Okay. Thank you, Maria, and we will get volunteers for you. Everybody's willing to and looking forward to helping out.
Awesome. Thank you.
John, do you want to talk about Communications Committee?
Sure. Communications met April 6th, and the minutes didn't make the agenda, but they are in the back of the room on the table. Obviously, communications has been a big deal lately, so just a couple of points that we want to reiterate. We're looking at putting together a fact sheet for staff council members. The fact sheet for members will be basically a list of questions, and they're on the minutes. I'd encourage each of you, if you have any questions that you want to add to that, what we're trying to do is look at new staff council members, and when they come on, what are the things that they need to be successful? What questions do they have? What answers can we give them right up front? How to use listserv? Some of the simple things and some of the more complex things. So please feel free to add questions and send them to me or send them so that we can put them before the committee and maybe put them together. Secondly, Staff Council Google group. There's more to come on this, but we're really trying to put together a Google group for members so that we can internally communicate. We had quite a few email strings lately among the members. It's very difficult to follow some of the email strings. So maybe putting into a Google group to where we can all kind of internally communicate in a group and bounce by ideas and thoughts back and forth to each other will be effective. So there's really more to come on that. Lastly, the feedback from constituents. Realistically, what Jennifer and I did, mostly Jennifer, is took what Walker had done with the tobacco hiring policy, Walker and Brad, I believe, right?
Mostly Walker.
And they did that survey for the library on the tobacco hiring policy. So basically we duplicated that out to our unit, and we had about a 53% response rate from our unit on that, which was fantastic. So when it really came down to the issue of the code of conduct, it was a suggestion that we attempt to use that tool to reach the staff in a quickly and efficient manner. With nearly 600 or better responses, I think the tool is extremely effective if it's used properly. I think, and I've had this discussion with Pips and Joella both, we need to give staff something back for their efforts. We need to let them know how effective it is. We also need to not use this tool too often to make it a burden. They need to be very short, quick surveys and allow them the opportunity to comment. The number of written text comments out of those 600 is absolutely phenomenal. A lot of vocal opinion from staff. It's also anonymous, so they're allowed to say whatever they want without any kind of tie back to them as individuals. And they're doing it. So just really encourage us to think about the tool, but use it effectively and efficiently and not to overuse it. And the rest is in our minutes reports. And I really appreciate your efforts on that, Walker, to kind of get that going.
Well, what I was going to recommend for kind of the whole group, just a guiding thing, since you're leading up the communication type efforts, then any time that we want to engage the staff, if one of us goes, hey, you know what, I think a survey would be appropriate, it'd be handy if everyone directed it toward John to begin with, so that that committee could look and say, okay, are we getting all the points that we need here? Is this information that we really want or not? And then we can distribute it fully like we had talked about earlier.
One thing I want to just comment on the surveys is that we be really careful about I understand the need for anonymity on submitting the comments, but some people have told me that were really passionate about a subject because they said they went in there 25 times and did it 25 times, and just because they're really concerned about something. I think we do need to be conscious of that and maybe put in some provision. I don't know what that would be.
It definitely depends on what the topic is, because that's one of the downsides is we don't have some sort of way to say, oh, no, you've already done this once before. And one of the pieces, like in our voting and in our staff appreciation day registration app, is that we're keying off the 30 million number, and we're not making it visibly usable for any other purpose. Nobody gets to see that in the results, but they only get to have one voice at that point in time for their opinion, so for better or worse.
So another thought on that would be it could be good and bad both. So you have one person that may speak 25 times, but then you have several hundred, maybe thousand of folks that don't say anything at all that are being spoken for those 25 times. So it's a margin of error, but I think the comments, all in all, and the content of the feedback is extremely valuable. Just my thought.
I really have to object there. I mean, that I think that's a bad assumption. I mean, yes, maybe there are going to be cases where we can't control people commenting anonymously, but I don't think it's fair to say, to assume that someone who's commenting multiple times is speaking for other people. I think that's really bad for polling.
And that was not my intent of the assumption. It was just, it was a could be. So you have one person speaking multiple times, but you have a lot of people that don't speak that may feel the same way. So
the important thing to realize is that those numbers aren't necessarily directly accurate. And I think that we all understand that here.
That's the margin of error. Yeah.
Right.
Thanks, John. Any other questions or comments for John?
The only thing I really have to say with regard to all of this is I understand that we may not want people to comment multiple times, but if you put, even if you put the place up there for people to enter their employee ID number, I guarantee you're not going to get as many feedback because you can tell people all day long that you're not tracking that and that you're not, and that it's not going to count anywhere. But I, for one, if you wanted my honest opinion, if I was concerned that I would be, I would have to suffer some repercussions, you could tell me that that number is not going to be seen anywhere. I'm not going to believe you, and I'm not going to put it in there, and I'm not going to comment.
It's a good. I think you make a good point, Mary Sue. There, I specifically had several phone calls to wanting me to ensure that it was actually anonymous. So, let's keep talking about this though, because I think Richard makes a good point. We don't want somebody contributing 25 times, but we do want to allay people's fears that it could somehow come back to them. So let's keep talking about this, and maybe, you know, specifically in communications, and just see what we can come up with.
I would like to point out that there are times and there are surveys that are perfectly appropriate to be gathering employee information on, as far as specifics, and I just don't feel that this was one of them.
Right.
I guess maybe you could put on each survey, have you voted on this survey before? Do you feel passionate on it? A couple little radio buttons, and then you could deal with it from there.
Okay. Well, thank you. Great stuff coming out of communications, and I think we've made a big stride forward in that this year. And I would like, you know, communications is a committee that we said we would hold for a year and kind of reassess at the end. So, John, just keep that in mind with your group, too, and let's talk about, you know, the need to keep it going or if we say we've kind of done what we want to do and try to have some kind of wrap-up by the end of the session. Those, you know, these are the things we accomplished. This is what we see we still need to work on, you know, maybe a time frame, but we can talk about that. Kayla, do you want to talk about Chancellor's Cornerstone Award?
We met about 3 weeks ago, and we reviewed the 167 pages for all the nominations, and we sat down. We sent out the document early, and we sat down and went through them, and we were able to forward the best four candidates to the Chancellor, along with recommendations on the kind of skimpiness of what this person gets for getting this award, and we offered some suggestions to make it more comparable to other awards that are being offered. So and then Nicole forwarded it to the Chancellor, I think, the following couple days. So it's out there, and the Chancellor has the nominations that we've narrowed down and should be ready to go for Staff Appreciation Day.
We got 107?
No, we had, how many nominations were there? 91, wow. Yeah. But the document was 168 pages or so, 167, but it was a long read, and we had to go through it over the weekend before we met. But otherwise, it was really successful as far as looking at, you know, getting out the information before we met, so we could just go through and decide who we're going to forward to the Chancellor.
So who was, I don't have the committee members' names on that, but who else was on there?
Robin, Mary Sue, Deb, Jeanette, and myself. So.
Well, thank you all. That's a lot of information to go through. So thank you for leading the effort and everybody for participating.
It was adorable reading.
Oh, yeah.
It was
yeah.
really nice to hear other staff recommend other staff and why they thought this person deserved this award. It was enjoyable.
Very nice. Well, thank you all for your efforts there. So at this point, I think we'll move on to roundtable discussion and turn off the recording.